Good morning. It's a beautiful New Year's morning at Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, January 1st, 2002. In the fireside room this morning are Peter Thompson and Jill Ross. Today's session number is Peace 2001-05, the fifth session of the Pieces Away retreat, and it's entitled Putting Peace into Action, Alternatives to Violence. Let's listen in.
Open, I won't make you do it with a bagel or food in your mouth, but open with our song this morning and then a meditation and a moment of centering silence. And then we're going to start with the vow of nonviolence to finish up. For those of you who weren't here yesterday, we discussed it and we broke up into small groups at the end of the time and didn't have a chance to come back. So we're going to give about a half hour's time to talk about that. And then I'll facilitate that piece of what we're doing, and then Peter's going to go on, and we're going to discuss where do we go from here with some ideas. We have some peace packets in place, and we have some input on that from you all. And we're going to wait right now. I'm going to wait for Peter. Welcome, everyone. This fifth and final session. The way when we get to the part of discussion from our small groups yesterday that I'd like to facilitate that is that everyone's voice is welcome and that we're receptive to listen, and if everyone would be willing to speak once and go around the circle, and that we not respond to people when they speak but let them have the ground, and that way everybody is free to speak. And then we'll take a short break in between, but not a break because we have special music. Is that true?
Yes.
Chris is going to provide music between, and that'll be our switching gears between the two mini sessions within the session this morning. So can we start with music?
Yeah, that'd be great.
The song that we will be teaching you today is one that the four of us collectively wrote in the songwriting workshop yesterday, and there's not a lot to say about it. You'll learn it. It started from a simple chant of four names or five names, because Dave started with us. I don't see anybody left. Simple chant of names and developed into this through several writing exercises.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It started Michael, Elizabeth, Jack, Joe, Dave. Michael, Elizabeth, Jack, Joe.
Yeah. Get the idea. That's how we came up with the rhythmic structure for the song. That's a great idea.
What's the first line?
We stand and we fall.
We stand and we fall in the same moment. Circling fear feeds the foment. We stand and we fall in the same moment. Swirling fear feeds the foment. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my eyes to understand. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my heart to understand.
Chorus, sing with us.
Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my eyes to understand. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my heart to understand. Hearts are shriveling everywhere. Blind injustice doesn't care. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my eyes to understand. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my heart to understand. Take the time to breathe my sister's air. take the time to breathe my brother's air. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my eyes to understand. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my heart to understand. There's so much more inside of me. Fear sometimes will let me be. There's so much more inside of me. That fear sometimes will let me be. Let me drop these scales, use my hands. Open my eyes to understand. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my heart to understand. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my eyes to understand. Let me drop these scales and use my hands. Open my heart to understand.
Thank Joe and Kristen and Ricky and all the people who participated in the arts yesterday. That it's a great gift, both to receive and give that. So thank you. We open with a reading by Audre Lorde this morning, and then we're going to take a moment of silence before we begin the session. History is not kind to us. We restitch it with living past memory, forward into desire, into the panic articulation of want, without having or even the promise of getting. And I dream of our coming together, encircled, driven not only by love, but by lust for a working tomorrow, the flights of this journey mapless, uncertain and necessary as water. Thank you, God, for this time together in a new year. We go forth in peace. Amen. This morning we're going to begin with something that we started yesterday. We had a rich discussion, an electric discussion, a deep discussion about the vow of nonviolence, first in a large setting and then in smaller groups. And I'd like to open the floor to the whole group for anyone who would like to share what came out of that or something they'd like to share. And a manner that I would like to use, as I said before, that each person is welcome to talk and have the floor, and if the rest of us would give them that holy space. And the response, if you'd like to have a dialogue after the discussion today, I encourage you to do that in the dining room, with each other, wherever, and to use this time so each person's voice merits the holy words that come from it, that we all listen attentively. So I open the floor to anyone who would like to discuss the discussion yesterday. Peter.
I'd like to speak first because I have great violence in my heart towards the Xerox machine right now. I was going to go make copies for the vow because I think I'm battling it, so I'm going to go back up and battle it. So I thought I'd put my two bits worth in.
I can okay some copies.
Oh, do you have some? Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, just awesome. And the comment I wanted to make is Elizabeth brought up in our small group, which is just Elizabeth and I, the difficulty of keeping the vow of nonviolence. In other words, if you look at it as a promise or a contract, it's obvious that, you know, just like with the Xerox machine or other things, by the time I get to the dining hall out of these sessions, I've probably broken the vow in either tongue or heart or many other ways. And so over the years, as I've taken this, I've thought of it more as a vow, like Ricky was talking about yesterday, not as a contract that if it's broken, it's gone, but as something to hold up and strive toward, knowing, just like in a marriage vow or a priestly vow, that you always fall short, but it is something to move toward. So it was very helpful for me to think about that.
Janet, I realized yesterday for the first time that I think of this more not as a thought but as a prayer. And that came, I became aware of that because every time I've taken a vow, there's been a prayer at the bottom of it, which that wasn't on the page yesterday, and I missed it. So I went out and looked at it on the wall and realized that that was a piece that helps me take it each year, because it's about desire and willingness and grace and prayer. So if that prayer wasn't included, I don't think I would take it. But for me, that prayer of desire makes it more possible for me to try to work towards living up to it.
Ricky?
I think Catherine and I talked yesterday, and I don't know how she's feeling now, and I'm not sure how I'm feeling, and I don't know if either of us will sign it or not, but I think that I would guess that even if those people who don't, that somehow, and I guess I've known this over the years from being with it for a long time, that it still is with you. And that it still resonates inside of you, even if you don't sign it.
Anybody else? I'd like to share on a more personal note about the struggles with it, that for me, I'm looking for something that will guide me as I go to serve at parish next, something I can put on my refrigerator and look at every day when I go out into a world that isn't here or not in the city, but third place. I struggle with knowing that violence exists in me in a deep way. I've been in a position once in my life where I was attacked and overcame my attacker with a knife in my hand and could have killed him at the point when the knife was in my hand. And there was something in me that swept through me where I didn't do that, that I injured the person but didn't put it in hard enough to kill them, and I could have. And so I live with that as a young person that happened to me, going through that and acting it out in various ways as an adult with inanimate objects and really allowing the rest of the action of that knife to come out of me. And it's a hard deal because I know how violent I am. I'm really glad that I didn't kill the person, even though they injured me. And I know from beyond that of staying with that difficult place, what it feels like to unleash that much violence and that exists within me. And so I struggle with violence in my own self, and I'm glad to have a tool. It's a hard thing to sign for me because a vow is a commitment. And it's a commitment to bring that out again, and that's why I'm sharing it, because it's not something I share very often. But that's my struggle this year, is knowing the amount of violence that exists within me. And thank God that in a moment where I could have acted, I didn't. But I'm left with that image of holding a knife in my hand, being able to kill or not.
I did not come here for the retreat until I got here, and I did not know about the bomb and the violence until getting here, and I feel that I've been committing myself more and more to nonviolence as I understand myself as well as what nonviolence is. And so I feel like I'm in a process around nonviolence, but it interfaces so much with my understanding of spirituality and coming out of a Catholic Christian background, so much so that for me, whatever baptism and the other commitments, confirmation and so forth, that I was initiated into as a child, a young boy, have merged with the meanings of nonviolence. I cannot separate my commitment to life in Christianity as I've come to express it and understand it. And I've committed it various times to pledges of pacifism and nonviolence, and I'm still sorting that out. I know I have the Hitler in me somewhere, as well as the Christ in me. And so for me to develop nonviolence is to take hold of what Gandhi would call invincible courage. So to develop my will and courage so I can face people like you just described, you know, if I have to, and take part in peace activities. I do a lot of civil disobedience, but that's just a tiny expression of nonviolence in my opinion. But still there's stuff to do that. So instead of saying it's, I have a hard time doing a pledge at this moment because I took the pledge and specified some things I need to do to improve myself this year, and I'm still trying to decide what to do with it.
Anyone else like to share? Back in the back, I don't see the food. Barbara.
One of the things that occurred to me yesterday, when I was kind of struggling with, is this a realistic way of life, is that from my own personal experience, violence only begets violence. And that we cannot change anything. We cannot create peace out of violence. We have to create peace out of peace, which means that there's a lot of work involved. We have to give up, we have to change the way we think. We have to, we have to put a lot of energy into it, because learning new ways of viewing things and new ways of approaching situations doesn't come naturally. That if I look at this, at any portion of this vow, it's a lot of work. It's hard, hard, thoughtful work. And so often I see people give up on nonviolence as a way of life because they don't see it as being, I just think it's given up on too easily, because it is hard work and it is a different way of looking at things than we have grown up looking at them, that we've been trained to look at them. I grew up in a violent place, and I was taught violence. And that is how I was taught to deal with any sort of conflict. And it has been a very long, hard struggle to come to any sort of space where I can react in a nonviolent manner, and I have learned from that if I continue to act in a violent manner, nothing changes.
Thank you.
I like the idea that people in this community and in communities everywhere are deciding to accept this as individuals and as a community. I personally can't sign it, but I support people that do, only with the disclaimer that you don't sign this and not think about what you're doing, even to the extent of we are not, most of us are not Jesus in the sense that we aren't persecuted. And the pray for those who persecute you doesn't apply to us. And the embracing, or the resisting the evils of oppressive structures and the causes of war, in that remember that we are an oppressive structure and maybe the cause of war. And that when you're resisting yourself, when you're resisting your own government, you're in a paradox. And just don't sign something like this without thinking about who you are and that we aren't the ones who are suffering, and think about those people in the world.
I want to thank everyone for being risk takers. Blessed are the risk takers. The effort that you take to be vulnerable and open your hearts in that place, change will happen, and the creation will grow with your change and our change. Thank you. Dan, did you want to?
Can I add a?
You may. Please.
Personal thing.
Please, thank you.
One of the things that came really clear to me yesterday was how personal this is, for me at least. And in my small group, and I know talking with others, it has brought up powerful experiences of abuse that we have received as individuals, and that can stand as a barrier. And I know I've shared with some others that I have, as a gay person, I've been beaten to the point of needing hospitalization. And one of the people I was with was an Air Force pilot, lost his eye as a victim of heterosexist violence. And he therefore lost his career and now works in a radio shack to make a living. And I think of women who are abused in physically abusive marriages, and for children growing up in that who even though they live in America, they're oppressed and they're abused. And what do we do in response? I know I have at times wanted to take up the sword. But as I prayed through this yesterday when we did that alone, something I found myself doing that helped me was just underlining the verbs in this statement, which helped me see that were I to sign, and I'm not sure I will, but I'm not saying, I'm not pledging to be perfect, but rather to be persevering, working, striving, and the other thing that really helps me in this is, as Barbara was saying, we're taught certain ways, and one of the ways I was taught was that to be nonviolent is to be passive and to be a victim. And so the part of this vow is to actively resist bullies, to use a grade school term, is important to me, and creative responses to conflict, even if you're a battered wife. We're not just laying down. We're not giving up our volition to respond and resist, but to do that in a nonviolent way. So those thoughts have helped me in the process, but it's still a really scary thing to contemplate what this would mean for me if I signed it.
So many things that have been said I relate to and feel that way, so I guess I won't kind of repeat them in a way. But one very detailed, specific thing that I'm struggling with is eating meat. And I took the vow of nonviolence 2 years ago, and at that point I had been a vegetarian for about 5 years, and it was very much consistent with that. I took the vow. The idea of living simply and conscientiously, not to deprive others, I feel, you know, that's just one very specific, detailed symbol to me of a deprivation of others and a sort of a deprivation of land and of health even. And so, and since then, I've started eating meat and feel like I'm not sure like how to come to terms with that. I know it's a very detailed thing, but it's sort of a thing that hangs me up about, gosh, can I, you know, is it possible to eat meat and be a nonviolent person? I don't, like, I'm not quite sure about that detail. And then so many other things that people said, I'm also feeling and thinking about those things as well, but that hasn't been said, and I just felt like that's something I'm struggling with, so.
Something that I'm a little hesitant to bring up in this community. I think I should, because also I heard that you had interface, I thought you had interface to Christian and Islamic communities. Am I wrong in that? So, you know, that's the question that I'm wrestling around with here, is this definition of violence, and that a lot of violence isn't, when you get to the point where you have the weapon in your hand, it's the little things that you do that lead up to it. And a lot of times those are violent ideas, the things that are said critically of a child when he's growing up, you know, the thing the word said out of the fist. And it's anything that invalidates anybody leads to violence. And so the question that I'm bringing up right now is that I've worked a lot with Islamic people and in Islamic culture, not a lot, but a fair amount with Islamic cultures. And they feel completely invalidated. Some can do understandably by the Christian worldview. And so do my Jewish friends. And so I think that tricky one, or as came up yesterday, that I might think I'm on a one true, you know, this concept of one true path really invalidates every other path. And I think a lot of particularly really devout Christianity can be invalidating to other groups, and maybe somebody who's violent, maybe there's a path of violence, like in the song, there's a time for picking up stones, there's a time for putting stones down. So maybe a path of violence actually has a way in the world, just like a true fundamentalist devoid of Christ path may have a way in the world. But as soon as I start thinking that I have, you know, the one true path or the one true Bible, I think that that sets up invalidation and sets up the other side getting all those things that happen when you start to be invalidated, start to be annoyed, irritated, aggressive, indignant, retaliatory, violent. So anyway, I wrestle with that inside Christian community. And I was curious because you said that you'd interface between...
We'll talk more. Thank you really for sharing that.
I don't know, I find that pretty difficult, but...
Thank you. Anybody else who was here yesterday that hasn't had a chance to speak who would like to speak? And I turn the floor over to my trusty colleague, Peter.
Thank you, Jill. We're going to now talk about avenues for putting nonviolence into action. And in a way, like you use this as a brainstorming session to evoke from you, and in a way I'd like to give some potential ideas and resources that we've thought about over the last months. But before we do that, I just want to say when Janet mentioned the prayer, I looked at the prayer and it hasn't been on here. And it was a part that I really missed in the last few months that I've been thinking about our war and our peacefulness and our lack of peacefulness. And I felt in this room a very respectful spirit in this half hour. And, you know, I wanted to thank God for creating that spirit and thank you for creating that around these very conflictual kind of thoughts and issues. And it says, thank you for the gift of community that supports and challenges me to walk the way of nonviolence, the way of the cross. And really, this is the most deeply I have felt that support and spirit since September 11th. So just profoundly, I'd like to thank God and thank the group that's here for that, this space. One of the ways you could be encouraged to use active nonviolence, and we really haven't talked about passivity in terms of peace, and we don't mean to, and there are lots of ways to do it. One of the ways you've heard is through song. I'm thrilled that this retreat has opened up the space for Michael to be one of the composers, and he said a couple of days ago when they're singing happy birthday to me that he can't sing, and now he's sung for all of you. And Chris would like to sing a song. I want to say a couple words about the song because it's going to change the mood of the room, and we want to become more active, but the song is Universal Soldier, and it was sung once at community. And some people came up and say, why are you just blaming the soldiers, the guy who pulls the trigger for all the violence? Usually the soldiers, particularly if you look at our army, are, you know, minorities, young. They have very little other alternatives in our society. They get stuck out there, and they're the ones on any armies around the world that oftentimes are most often pulling the trigger. And I think that's a very valid comment. But you might listen, this is the Universal Soldier. And so it's lots of religions and lots of countries. And so it's not just that kid, that African-American 19-year-old kid pulling the trigger, but it's all of us. It's those who have put the system in operation. It's the generals, it's the presidents who have given the orders. And so it's universal. So if you just keep that in mind when you hear these words, I think it might give you a different message from the song.
Come on, here.
This is not the way we put an end to war.
Things to share. If I could get Chris and Joshua and Kata to help me just pass out some of this, these things. To just give a brief description of some of the work they've done and where they are on working on peace. One is Aaron, who has just started. One is Kent, who has spent more time. And one is Bernie, who's virtually spent a lifetime in peace. And I thought of it would be interesting for them just to give you a brief statement about some of the work they've done. The materials they're getting passed out are for particularly those who haven't been in the community while we've been generating these. But as these people talk, you could maybe look at this part of the peace packet. This one is the peace packet that we put together shortly after September 11th, and it has in the back 20 actions for peace on the next to last page. Right here, it's a real nice thing to revolt for maybe some of the sorts of things that we've come up with in brainstorming before. Aaron, would you be willing to start?
Sure.
And while he speaks, I'm going to pass out some photos because we have in photographic form the events that Aaron is going to tell you about. And it ties into that gate of violence over there that we are going to convert into a shrine of peace at the Vespers tonight.
You'll see a lot of the pictures here. Most of them, I believe, are from the rally. Just for some of you who might not know who I am, my name's Aaron Nelson, and I serve the village here as a carpenter. November 17th was the day down in Columbus, Georgia, that a rally was held outside the gates of Fort Benning, down there in Georgia, to protest against the U.S. Army School of Americas. They train Latin American soldiers in acts of terrorism, kidnapping, and killing. And they do this on American soil. We bring them up here, train them, and then send them back to kind of wreak havoc for their military rulers in countries down in Latin and Central America. A brief history of why I wanted to go to this rally. I felt it was pretty safe, a pretty safe way to start out my process of thinking in ways of nonviolence and how to work towards in myself different ways that I can look towards peace in my daily life, and in a broader scale about just living every day and working just a little bit towards making a difference. I went with Peter, who's been involved with this protest since pretty much the beginning. And I went with Ben and Dan, both pastors here, so I had a lawyer and two pastors along with me. It was a baby step, but I felt like, I kind of felt like they were holding my hand, so it's kind of nice. I tried not to have too many expectations going down there. I just kind of wanted to go and experience, and in a sense, kind of just be a fly on the wall and just take all this in, and then be able to process it at a later time. I got there and there was just tons of information. There was a rally on Saturday and then the protest was on Sunday. And at the rally on Saturday, they talked from everything about the war in Afghanistan, an organization called Plan Colombia, migrant workers protesting Taco Bell, military bombings in Vieques. And it just got my brain stirring and it felt pretty overwhelming, really. I felt like there was so much that I couldn't pick one thing out. And I just expected, I guess, kind of naively, that they would just be focusing just on the protest the next day, but everyone had an agenda there that day, and it was a good opening experience for me, I kind of feel, but it was also just like information overload. Father Bourgeois, who is the kind of the initiator of this protest and kind of brought the struggle with the School of Americas to light, he said near the end of the rally, "It can stop us from getting in, but it can't stop the truth from getting out." And I kind of felt really ignorant at that point because I didn't really know what the truth was. As Barbara said earlier, living nonviolence is hard work, and I see that it is hard work, and I think that kind of cripples me in doing anything. When September 11th happened, I felt as though there was just so much happening, and it was, our nation's leaders were running here and there, people were talking about it up here, and I didn't feel like I had any sort of voice, and so I just kind of shrunk back and just didn't do anything. So this trip to Columbus was just a small step in a long journey, I think, and I feel like I know so little. And speaking in terms of how our government oppresses people and how we can change that, I feel so helpless, really. It's such a huge thing. I'll get there.
Could you show them what you did that day and explain it?
As the protest started, they read in Central and Latin America who had been killed at the hands of soldiers who had been trained at the School of Americas. And they handed out crosses, like this one, had the name written across here, sometimes where they were from. We heard as we were staying there waiting for the procession to begin that they were arresting people who were placing crosses in the fence. So at that point, I believe I talked with Ben that even if they were, we decided that we were going to go and place our cross up there. But when we came by, the army, usually you can march right onto the base, but this year they had put up a cyclone fence across the front with barbed wire on the top. So this fence that they had put up, like Peter said, really became this memorial and this shrine, and it was just gorgeous. I think the pictures, of course, don't do it justice, but it was just very moving. It's very powerful. So.
Thanks, Aaron.
Aaron, I have a question.
Yes.
In the picture where you were all lying on the ground, what was that?
That was what they call a die-in. It was the form of protest that these students, it was mostly students who decided to demonstrate in that fashion, just very nonviolently. They just walked up and laid down as if they had been killed by soldiers from the School of Americas.
The reason the 17th is picked, Jack, is that it's the anniversary of the assassination of six Jesuit priests, their housekeeper and her daughter, and so this is a reenactment of those victims, those specific victims. And the UN Truth Commission went down and determined that the majority of the soldiers that went out and carried out those murders had been trained at the School of Americas.
Peter, one more thing that I was thinking about yesterday that this just really hit me is that I've kind of used the excuse in the past that I kind of grew up feeling sheltered and haven't really been confronted with issues of like social justice and violence. But I'm, through my thinking and through realizing this, I feel like I've made a choice to live that way. I've chosen to not educate myself and talk with people about it because, like Barbara said, it's difficult. And so I struggle with that in that it's just easier to stand back and not do anything. But I'm realizing more and more that that's a choice that I'm making that hasn't really been conscious with me before. So it's becoming more and more something.
Thanks, sir. Okay. Be back.
All right. I'm going to try and shrink a coming-of-age novel into 5 minutes. And first of all, I'll precede everything by saying that I grew up as a pacifist and as nonviolent as one can be. I wasn't allowed to have toy guns or anything. I signed pacts of nonviolence throughout growing up. So, past that, in college, I heard about a camp called Seeds of Peace Camp for Israeli and Palestinian kids in the woods of Maine, where they get together in a normal summer camp setting, Arab kids and Israeli kids from around the Arab world and the United States. And they do normal summer camp things and at the same time intense conflict resolution. I did that for 3 years. In the middle of that, I decided I wanted to know more, so I studied in Jerusalem for 6 months, learned Arabic, studied with Israeli and Palestinian professors simultaneously so that we would form our own judgments by the two biased accounts. At the end of college, I felt like I wanted to do something. I was quite an idealist, and I designed a program to do conflict resolution through music in Jerusalem, and had garnered enough support to get myself over there and started working, found jobs in Bethlehem and an apartment in Bethlehem to stay in, and had started work, but basically getting everything ready. And the day that I was supposed to, or the day before I was going to start finding kids, which is the final step, the conflict started over there, the latest conflict. And I was actually in Jerusalem when Ariel Sharon went into the city and when all the special units of Israeli police went into the city. So, and I'll say also that I know about 1,000 Israeli kids and 1,000 Palestinian kids from my work with Seeds of Peace. And so I suffer when people tell me about what's happening because I'm afraid for them. One of my kids is an Arab Israeli, a Palestinian living within Israel with Israeli rights supposedly, I was beaten to death while I was still there in October of 2000. So, following up on that, Peter wanted me to talk about what we can do in the world. And at age 21, I went out and I was an idealist and I said, I can change the world single-handedly. And I was actually talking yesterday and realized, I've thought about it in myself and realized that not only did I in 1 month feel that I would pick up a stone or a gun and fight against the Israelis, I was so angry in living with the Palestinians during the conflict, but I also realized that at my age, if I had grown up in an oppressed society like Palestine, or most likely further than Palestine, that I might have become a terrorist because I'm that, I like to buck the system. And my mother basically is the reason I came back. I stayed there for 2 weeks during the fighting, machine guns, power was out, everything, people were sort of threatening me. And she was terrified, so I came home, and it was a good decision. What my message is that I'm actually carrying a message from a girl named Mira in Bethlehem. The last time I talked to her, she was the last time that Bethlehem was being occupied by tanks, and there was a tank right outside her house in Beit Jala. And every time it fired, her whole house would shake. So her family was basically living under tables. And she said to me, do you hear about our situation? You know, do you really know what's happening to us? Because she's afraid that no one knows. And the only thing that you can do in this situation is not go over there and try and change things, because it won't work. It's to educate yourself as to what's really happening over there, because I personally believe that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is the reason, is the center of this of this worldwide conflict right now, in almost any way that I can figure it out. And I identify myself as an Israeli, as an oppressor, as one of the ones that does this to my friends. And I've tried to understand why these my friends have to suffer. I think the best thing that we can do in the world in any situation is not only think about the Israelis and the Palestinians, but think about the oppressed people among us, obviously, because we are all oppressed and we're all oppressors in a lot of ways. And I know, you know, my father has spent his life working with abused children, and I know that that is as honorable as, you know, going and being, standing in front of bullets in Israel, you know. So do what you can in your own life to help people. That's, I think, the way that these kind of conflicts will stop.
Thanks, yeah.
I'd like Bernie to have the mature overview, but I'm going to ask him not to give a rundown of his life, because we get out of here next month, but just to talk about the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which he's been deeply involved in as another resource for action.
Thanks. I can't really add much to what they say, except really give some details on the Fellowship. There's a lot of other peace groups too that are out there. I'd like to say that I was at the School of Americas and did not know these men before I went there and just met them here, but I've gone there many times. I've been arrested there, or risked arrest many times. They still haven't put me in jail or anything, because there's too many people risking arrest, and have been, you know, you pick a few. So you can go there and people there that you know from whatever, and not even meet them, because there's been a significant number of people taking part in that. It's a tremendous experience. I belong to FOR, Fellowship of Reconciliation, on a local level in Western Washington, where it's very active, as well as on a national council for FOR, and that meets in Nyack, New York, where the national headquarters are. FOR is a 85-year-old peace group started during World War I by two pastors, one from Germany and one from England, and they committed to each other to work toward ending war. And, so it's been going on from that point. It's an interfaith organization, and it's international. People I work with are either in Western Washington or part of the national FOR. Just to give you a couple ideas on what kinds of things they do, and it's impossible to try to summarize the various things. Right now they have a campaign of conscience which deals with the sanctions coming out of the Iraq war, and give people the opportunity to contribute to medical and other aid, which is illegal, so you can risk some kind of complicity with that. A second area is the Middle East peace campaign, which deals with Israel and Palestine. They send junkets over there so we can go over and participate and deal with some types of things I can't mention. And the third area is a decade of nonviolence. 40 Nobel Peace Prize people petitioned the UN to declare the first decade of the new millennium to nonviolence, and there's a lot of things that come out of there. I think the most important thing, from my understanding, is training, understanding, development. I spend a good part of my time just studying what violence is and what it's about, and developing myself and others in what it means to be nonviolent and still active. So the decade of nonviolence is trying to create a culture of nonviolence and a culture of violence. That's the way I see it, at least in the United States. There are many ways to affiliate with organizations like the FOR. Individually, you can become a member, and there's a pledge card and so forth to allow you that, and just get their fellowship magazine. It's got a tremendous history, and Pieces the Way is a book over in the bookstore. Probably that's what this retreat came about. Walter Waite took past issues of Fellowship magazine and picked the best articles that he could find, a lot of many good articles on peacemaking. So just personal education is a method, and that's one way to affiliate with FOR. I mentioned that there are local groups. There's not local groups everywhere, although I think everywhere in the country there are individuals. There's not local groups everywhere. Religious peace fellowships are connected to FOR. The Lutheran Peace Fellowship, the Buddhist Peace Fellowship, we even have a Muslim Peace Fellowship started near us in Nyack. So through peace fellowships, Pax Christi and AFSC worked together with FOR. So there's a lot of ways to mix with people in becoming active. If you want to get information, they have a website, forusa.org, and all this kind of stuff. There's a phone number in Western Washington I can give you if anybody wants that. So that simply is a way to kind of hook onto it. We all pick our place and start our journey, run a journey. We're all doing peacemaking. I mean, everybody in this room is doing peacemaking, because I view it as, you know, any way to try to improve yourself as becoming a better human being is peacemaking. To the more glorious things of civil obedience. Glorious, sometimes it's glorious. I just want to mention one other thing, just for a little flavor. For those who live in the Western Washington area, on January 15th, there's a peace walk starting at Chief Self's grave. And it's being organized by Buddhist Native Americans and people like me. I'm just in support of others I know. And they're going to commemorate Chief Joseph, Chief South, and go to Ground Zero, which is a base or a protest place across, next to the base called Bangor Sub Base, where 1,600 nuclear warheads are there. They're the most powerful nuclear base in the world. And then they're going to go down the West Coast and across the country to Washington, D.C., visiting Native American places. It's not a protest. It's not a political thing. It's a human thing, a process. And I just want to mention this. A way to get involved or to be aware of, if you're in the area, just to support that. A little piece of that is that there's a Buddhist monk bringing a living coal, a flaming coal from that stemmed from the bombing of Hiroshima in Japan. So it's got that to it. So I'd be glad to talk with anybody after.
I just underscored during the Bosnian War, I was at the FOR meetings in Twin Cities, and they brought together diverse groups very beautifully. There were Muslims there, there were from Bosnia, there were Orthodox from Serbia, there were lots of Christians, there were Jews, so it's a very inclusive kind of organization.
We always got to work at it. It is work. It's got to reach out. But thank you.
Thanks, Bert. What are there some ideas or comments about ways to put nonviolence into action in your hearts that people would like to share right now? Jack?
I think getting involved in media, because I think so much of our violence is projected through the media, and that's a growing movement in terms of media. There's a movement to transform media.
Like the movies and TV and things like that. Yeah. Yeah, I think there are groups.
And computer games and... The new nation is filled with lots of information on this. I think that's... Because that's where we get so much of our information.
That's a good point.
I found that in my 7 years in Mexico, that many times the systems for how we're able to even talk are violent. And within my own church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and then the private nonprofits that I work with there, that money was the talking stick in most cases for the North American churches, and voice was the talking stick within the Mexican nonprofits. And in my work as a woman, to walk nonviolently and in peace, it took slowing way down to be with women in the dirt, to empower women to have voice that they don't in a meeting. That if there's a meeting of us and there's 50 men, or 50 women and one man, women don't speak up. So for me, it's creating forums where everyone has voice and thinking about institutional oppression, where some of the people in a room never get to express an opinion or a voice. And I use my own voice that way because I have one.
Thanks, Jill. I particularly liked on that list, I think Kita came up with it, Cocktail Party for Peace. Which shows you've got to be creative. Like I got Forrest interested in the crossword this morning, and because I was trying to get him turned on for the, you know, shrine tonight, and we came over, and he was fairly disinterested. And we finally got his cross in there, and all of a sudden he looked at it and he said, he got really interested. He says, I like this, you know. I said, why? He says, it's a perfect sword. And so he's got his cross now, but now this is the creative opportunity for the stewards this afternoon to get him to turn it back over again. It's so natural. know the pen. What we found the pen, the reason, I mean, these articles, if you, for your congregation, can go back and, or for yourself, write down how you're feeling, whether or not you think this is a just war or not a just war, to write an article, to send it. The articles here can give you some inspiration. A wonderful exercise, I think, for all of us, is back in October, we tried to write down as a community where we were on this. And we had lots of discussions like this, only oftentimes not quite so smooth. But going through that exercise was really helpful. In preparation for this, I found in the Resource Center this resource, Violence to Wholeness, and it's got a 10-step program, and it would be ideal for a congregation to take, you know, 10 Wednesday nights to go through and educate yourself. One of the one of the weeks would be about Gandhi, one of the weeks would be about Christ, one of the weeks would be about feminist issues, one of the weeks is gay and lesbian rights, those sort of things. A wonderful learning experience talking about, you know, this informing yourself. One of the things past informing, you could get a t-shirt for a Christmas gift like I got. Mm-hmm. About putting, you know, things to action. One of the incredible things, it's not going to work for Beth Stewart this year. You have to do what's appropriate in your life, but there's a nonviolent peace force that's starting. And it's going to do trainings in this country and internationally, so we are going to actually start mobilizing a peace army. And it's going to go to places where there is conflict. And based upon active nonviolence, they're putting together a whole organization. I happen to run into one of the women who was setting it up when I was down at School of the Americas. wonderful thing I just stumbled on was getting on the website for Pax Christi. The Catholics generally are way ahead of us. They have been organizing for so long, almost all of these things, the vow of nonviolence, from violence to wholeness, a lot of it comes out of the Catholic peace movement. And just in the last couple days, through the website for Pax Christi, I'll pass these around, you can put it down. Honey. We learned about last night, there was a peace walk from Bethlehem into the temple in Jerusalem of Christians and Muslims. I don't know what happened, but it's a very powerful thing, and if we hadn't had so many other activities, it would have been a wonderful thing to align with. Yesterday, I got from the B&B the fact that there's a new House bill, 2459, and I would like to start today with a letter-writing campaign. It's been presented by Representative Dennis Kucinich from Ohio. What a guy. It's a bill to establish a cabinet-level Department of Peace position, and in the bill it has anti-terrorism provisions, alternative American approaches to war, and sustainable peace. So you can call your congressman. And the other thing I got off of this website, some wonderful things. National actions and where they are for the Feast of the Holy Innocents, with phone numbers, you know, in all these different locales around the country. There's the Pax Christi Young Adult Retreat in February in New York City. There's the Pax Christi Leadership Summit, Speaking Truth to Power, in March in Washington, D.C. There's Flying the Flag of Peace on Martin Luther King's birthday, January 15th. Life and Death, Coming to a Theater Near You, a new film that's just coming out called Life and Death. All sorts of things that, you know, ways to stay connected. So it's a great use of the internet, which we don't have up here.
I just add that From Violence to Wholeness was the base of this retreat 2 years ago. and the Peace Fellowship will make themselves available to come to your congregation or community to help lead a retreat around that. And there's also a Lutheran supplement if you'd like to get some stuff from that, and it's all for the bookstore, right, Joshua? It's in for sale in the bookstore, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just in another world.
I think it's important to acknowledge Joe's comment about just the simple kind of concrete thing of, do I eat meat? I think that's really important. It's those day-to-day things that are disciplines for us that we consider. Another resource for that sort of thing is a group called Alternatives that has a lot of different sorts of research on the simplified lifestyle sorts of questions and how to do things differently and positively. So I think those lifestyle issues are important things that are part of this key that our day-to-day does.
Yeah, I hope what this retreat has been about is not that we know the way. That each person, no matter where they are, if they think that they can back our country because it's heading for peace, that's a place to be, and a place to be involved and to be advocating, if it's to have peace in your heart through daily discipline of prayer, because that's what works for you, if it's connecting to some organizations, whatever it might be. That it be a conscientious and a heartfelt and a faith-based, in our community, thing that you take with yourself so that one more step has happened for you in your journey as peacemakers. Because I think it's got to be holistic. If anyone, Gandhi always said, I think I started the retreat by getting up and reading what he said, if anyone thinks they know the way or they have the whole truth, then they're denying the truth and peace right there, because we all have a piece of it. I think that's what the common table is about. I think that's what community is about. I think that's what the oneness of humanity is about. That is in so many of the biblical passages we started with, and in so much of the words of Christ. And so, with that, I would close, except I have one more action for peace. We need some volunteers to carry the crosses up to the dining hall. It would be an active way to put peace into action.
You can come and paint them this afternoon if you have a minute or two. I'm going to carry paints over. You can take them home and collage them. You can put glitter on them. Anything you have with you to acknowledge the crosses, sit after the night, you can take them with you if you'd like to. They'll have paints available in the dining hall afternoon.
Wonderful. And tonight, come and help us change this gate of violence, which is holding out, into a shrine of peace. Whether you're going to take the vow or support others who take the vow or find the next step of peace in your heart, come and join us. And you might want to have a rough cross. You might want to scar it up. You might want to paint it black. You might want to make it beautiful with glitter. Whatever you want will be your part of creating that shrine of peace. Amen.
Peter?
Yeah, sorry, Joe.
Do we have time to end it with a song?
We sure do.
Great.
That would sound perfect.
I know everybody's all comfy and everything, but I thought we could just stand up and make a circle around here. It'd be great just to end the whole retreat.
Go! Got a lot of room here to make it bigger.
So
we get the whole crutches over there.
Yeah. Just as a way to mark our last session together.
We did this song earlier, a couple days ago, and I just feel like it's so appropriate in terms of all the questions and uncertainties and different ideas and opinions and struggles. And the idea of once you see something, once you know something, that you can't really turn away from it. You can sort of physically look away, but you can never really not know it's there. And I think that we're all seeing a lot of things in our world and in ourselves that we can't really like turn away from, and then just they're always there. They're always kind of nagging at us. And so this idea of never turning back is really, it's almost like we have no choice but to just kind of keep on going. So I'd like to do that walking song again as just a way to acknowledge and sort of be together in our walking in whatever journey this is for each of us. So, I'm gonna keep on walking forward. Gonna keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back. Never turning back. Gonna keep on walking forward. Gonna keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back. Never turning back. Gonna loving deeply. Gonna keep on loving deeply. Keep on loving deeply. Keep on loving deeply. Never turning back. Never turning back. Singing loudly. Gonna keep on singing loudly. Gonna keep on singing loudly. Keep on singing loudly, never turning back, never turning back.
Asking questions,
gonna keep on asking questions, gonna keep on asking questions, keep on asking questions. Never turning back, never turning back.
Living boldly, gonna
keep on living boldly. Gonna keep on living boldly. Keep on living boldly. Never turning back. Keep on walking forward. Gonna keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward.